Hello, everybody. Hope you liked the conference so far. It was a great day yesterday. I think we have seen a lot of different stuff, a lot of different items, and this one should be different again because it's all about hybrid. It's all about integration. I'm Sam Van Houten. I'm working in Codit. We are around 60 people located in Belgium, France, and Portugal. And we've been working on Azure since the very first beginning in the Red Dog days. I'm a virtual TSP, and I'm not an MVP. I'm a Windows Azure Insider, you know, getting insights into the things that are going on. What we have built is Codit Integration Cloud. So that's a SaaS platform for a lot of customers who can, it's very SaaSy. Customers who want to outsource their integration. And I've been doing BizTalk for a long time. And what you see is that customers are starting to move to the cloud for a lot of reasons. And I will talk about these reasons. But the platform that we've built is built on top of Windows Azure. But if you've worked with Windows Azure, you see that it's a set of components. It's a very rich and powerful toolbox. But the actual solution, that's the things that at this point in time you have to build yourself. So that's what we have built. A high level overview, it's a set of worker roles with some workflow in it. We have persistence on SQL Azure or Azure Database, storage, and of course we heavily use Service Bus. So that's one of the things I'll be talking about today, Service Bus, because that's really all the messaging that we do internally. But what we see is that, of course, we have a lot of BizTalk server and now the BizTalk services, so I'll talk about that too. That's a new service that was added and is still in preview recently. And then, of course, it's all about the connectivity because most of the customers don't have all their data inside their data center anymore or only things in the cloud. It's always about hybrid stuff. You have some customers, you have exceptions. But it's all about connecting not only applications anymore, but also things, your business partners and devices. We see that more and more things popping up. There's cars driving around that are connected through GPRS and all these things. You have the Salesforce going on to the customers with their iPads and tablets, like services, of course. And then you have the SaaS applications. So things like Salesforce, things like CRM Online, Office, that's all totally different. What we had in the past was, it was easy to have your Service Bus inside your company and have all these applications talking to each other. But there's now new challenges. The problems are the same, the solutions are different, and the challenges are new. So we have a lot of things that are new with the cloud. Latency is different, network connectivity, security, that's all items that were totally that have totally changed the way of setting all these things up. And that's what I'll be talking about in this current session. The technologies available in Windows Azure that are around integration, and there's others like SignalR and all of that. It's just impossible to fit all of them in one session. So I'll be focusing on Service Bus because that's really the application way of setting things up. BizTalk Services, the new thing. Data integration, a little bit on SQL Azure Data Sync. We have identity integration with Active Directory. And in the end, I'll have a nice demo on network integration with Azure Virtual Network. So it will be mostly demos. I have some slides added, mostly for the reference, to see things in the end. So the first thing that I will start with is Service Bus Relay. Who has used Service Bus Relay already? It's a good show of hands, thanks. So what is it? You have your on-premises thing. It's typically a service that you can expose over WCF and other items. You expose it and actually you have a rendezvous in the cloud. So you have your servicebus.windows.net namespace with the paths that you can set up. And this makes it a public DNS address. So your sender can just talk to the service bus, so to the public address that you gave it. And they will do some internal networking things with a socket forwarder and all of that, these items. It's very difficult to explain all of these things without going too technical. It just, there's one thing that you should remember, that for the sender and the receiver, it's mostly an outbound connection. So it's firewall friendly. And we have used this in a lot of cases where you need to connect to on-premises applications inside the firewall without having to set up a reverse proxy and all of these things. And it's pretty well. There's some items that you need to look into, but that's what I will be talking about after my demo. Okay. So the first demo that I'll be giving is one of the things that we have developed for the integration cloud. It's about getting access to on-prem stuff. So you have, for example, files, you have databases, you have queues, you have your on-premise applications. And we want to connect to them from the cloud. For example, there's a sales order coming in for a customer, and we have to be able to send that sales order maybe to an old school file system. What we do, we have this cloud connector here, and we manage it from the cloud. So we have the portal that I'll be showing, and in the portal we can manage the cloud connector. It's the on-premise Windows service, but it exposes its management service over the relay binding, and that makes it easy because there can be customers with like 10 or hundreds of these cloud connectors in their different centers, and it's very easy to manage them from a central place. We don't have to log on locally. And the messages, of course, are being sent in a firewall-friendly way. So one thing I wanted to show, this is the type of demos that I'm used to give to BizTalk people. I drop a file, and the file arrives. And everyone is finding this very nice. With Azure, things are a little bit different. With Azure, it's more front-end demos you mostly see. So my demos will be more file drops and, you know, connectivity. So please be excited about that. Eh? The first thing I wanted to show was this connector. So what I have here, locally, I have my connector service, like there. So it's running locally just as a Windows service. That's the only footprint I have. And it exposes a service to the outbound world through the relay binding. So what I can do in the configuration, and this is the portal that we have built, in the configuration I can select my connector, CloudBurst 13, and it now connects from the cloud to my on-premises system where there is the cloud connector exposed. And you can see there's one channel that we call it with the properties. So I'm able to change passwords, to change the settings for the pulling of files and all of that from the cloud. I don't have to go on premises. And what you will see is I have set up an endpoint, and it should go here. I have set an endpoint pulling on FTP. So I will be pulling on FTP in this location, and I will be sending the file to my cloud connector. So that I have a transmit endpoint. It's subscribing on these properties. So if you have used service bus messaging, you will be able to make the connection because that's the service bus properties. But I'm using the cloud connector here with the settings. So I'm using a namespace, a service path, and a user. Please notice that I'm not using the owner because that's typically the super user. So I'm getting back on that later. So whenever I drop a file here, it should arrive in this folder through the cloud connector. So this is the FTP thing. If I do a refresh, you can see that it's on the cloud there, on the FTP. Let's do a refresh again. So it's disappeared. If I go to the tracking, I can easily see what happened with the message. You can see it's got picked up and it's been delivered over the connector. So if I now have a look in my local application, 9 o'clock, you can see that the message was delivered from the cloud through the cloud connector, so that on-premises proxy, you can say, on the file. So that's the way of easily managing and connecting, reaching out to services. So what's different here, I'm in a network that I typically don't control, and I was still able to pull from to connect from the cloud in a firewall-friendly way to this service. okay? Some things that are very useful in these scenarios, it uses load balancing. So I could set up easily this service on 10 servers. I could set it up on 2 servers in my data center and maybe 10 servers in the cloud. So that way, I would have 10 endpoints listening on the same service endpoint. So if you send to that endpoint, it gets distributed over all the machines. I think you can use up to 20 machines on the same service bus endpoint. So imagine that you have an on-premises service that is just doing calculations, so stateless things, and you have it hosted on one server, and you know that you have that predicted peak, you just set up some services in the cloud. You don't have to connect them in a virtual network because they will be using the same endpoint and the cloud will distribute everything. So you have an easy way of scaling up for that small period in time. What we also use frequently is the WCF routing service. By using that, you can expose one public endpoint, and that endpoint can shield and route to other internal endpoints. Why do we do that? Mostly because it's cheaper. If I would expose 10 endpoints for my 10 internal services, I would have to pay 10 times the time they are listening. If I have one public endpoint exposed over the WCF routing service, I'm only paying for that one endpoint. So that's something that we often use. Security, you have different ways of using it. And you have the Service Bus AZ tool. You can download it. If I go quickly to here, you can see, for example, that it's just a matter of saying, with the credentials, you can create a new user and you grant him the rights, for example, to listen or to send on a specific path. So by doing that, I make sure that he only is able to use this or this endpoint. Okay? And last one, a lot of customers, typically the larger accounts, block outgoing IP addresses to a specific range. And it's not all, it's something you should avoid, and it's not always easy to convince those guys, because IP addresses and the range can change. Clemens Vasters has a nice blog post on that. If you want to read, the link was there. This is for the reference, if you want to have your connection set up, the ports that you have to open. So that was Service Bus Relay, okay? It's a synchronous way of reaching out to your application service. This one is mostly the messaging. A messaging comes down to queuing. So if you've used MQ Series, MSMQ, things like that, then this will be very familiar. Also like JMS, the Java side of that. There's a lot of concepts that are the same. What's very nice about that, it's asynchronous. So you just store something on a queue and someone else can pick it up. So for example, inbound messages coming in, you don't care how fast you process them. You just have them on a queue and it's easy to scale them afterwards. Also for the thing that Martin said yesterday, the event-driven architectures, this is a good way of having your events published and have an easy way of having extra handlers on top of that. So I'm just having a demo where I'll be sending to a specific queue and I'll be reading from this queue. This demo is using one of the new features that I think were in the 2.0 release. It's the way of reading from the queue with a retry policy. So I think Scott and Magnus talked about that, like retries. It's not only for storage, it's not only for SQL, Azure, it's also for the service bus. So there can be transient faults, and now it's also out of the box in this thing. So I have some code ready. For service bus. So what I'll be doing here, first of all, I'll be sending. Sending is pretty easy. It's just a matter of creating a namespace manager from a connection string. And then I'll be looping at this moment just 10 messages. And I'll be sending them, like here, over the queue client, I send a new brokered message. A message has a body, so you can have a payload in it. And it also has a context, like message properties, its name value pairs. And those properties will be used to do routing. So if you want to have And I'll get back to my slide here. If you want to have PubSub, then I can push a message, and it can have some properties. For example, country equals Belgium, and auditing equals one. I could have a subscription with a filter that says, if auditing is one, it will be delivered to that subscription. I could have a country equals France and a country equals Belgium, for example. So by doing that, I can have one message sent to my topic, and it would be delivered to two different subscriptions, the Belgian and the auditing subscription. And they act as a virtual queue. So you can have different receivers. You can have a handler for the auditing, and you can have a handler for the Belgian thing. So that's very nice. And it's very interoperable. So you have the .NET stuff, of course, but you have AMQP. It's a standard where Microsoft heavily invested in. And they are probably the farthest in the support for AMQP. And of course, you have REST. So I also have a demo, but I couldn't do it here, with a device. So Micro Framework, for example, with Netduino and all of that, you can easily go polling on queues and instrument your devices from the cloud with that. And I'm just using the Micro Framework. You don't even have a string replace in that, but I'm using it to do the REST connectivity through the cloud. Okay, so I'll be sending these messages. It's pretty easy. You will see that there's 10 messages being sent, and the receive side, and that's what makes it a little bit more interesting. The receive side has this new pattern. It's the event-driven messaging options. So it's like a message pump. So before we had this, we had to build a lot of multi-threading and thread handling and all of that ourselves. And now it's like a pump available. So you create this new object, and you can set autocomplete. You can set handlers for exceptions and for messages. But you can also set the maximum concurrent calls. So if I would spin this up to 20, I would have 20 threads created automatically for me by this object. So I create a queue client again. And then these are some properties that you can use for tuning to get faster processing, to get faster throughput from the service bus. This actually means you get 20 messages in your batch, and then you process them. So if you have a lot of throughput expected, where latency maybe doesn't matter, but throughput is more important, I would say go for the prefetch count. And then here we have the retry policy. So on the queue client, I can set a retry policy with a back-off delta and all of these things. So you can specify how long it will take and keep on polling on transient faults. Okay, so an on message, the thing that I will be doing, I just write the current thread and I complete the message, that's all. Of course, in real things you do more, so you can complete the message. What we often use is deferring of a message. So if something fails, like we can't connect to a remote system, we defer the message. If you defer a message, it's like no one can read it unless they have the ID of the message. So we defer the message, we store the ID in our management database. And in the portal, we use that ID, for example, to say, resubmit the message now, like to have your management done by that. So then you can peek for that specific message. Okay? So if I just fire this up, you will see that there's multiple threads normally pulling on the messages. At least that's what they should be doing. It's still executing. It takes a long time. Okay. Let's get back after this. So, but that way of working would just allow me to have all the messages handled in a separate thread. So the transient faults, I talked about that. You also have the receive mode. So you can say peak lock, which means I get a message, I lock it, but it won't get deleted from the queue until I say so. So if I fail, the message will be, it has a lock timeout, so it will become visible again after some time. You also have receive delete. That's where you don't care about losing maybe a message. And that goes obviously a little bit faster. The prefetch count and all of these things allow you to tune the performance and the throughput. And what we often use, typically for signals and all of that, is empty messages, because you don't have serialization. So you just send a message without a body, And you just have the properties, so that context, the name value pairs, you just use that, so you can say action equals, and you give it a comment, instead of serializing everything in your body. There's a limit in service bus for the message size, I think 250K or 56. So what we do with messages that are larger than that, it depends. One of the options is that you can store it on blob and keep the blob reference, like the shared access signature, in the body, or you can use sessions. So you can chop the message in fragments of 250K, and you can combine them in one session. That means they will be delivered to the same receiver. Even if I have 10 receivers polling on the same queue, that one session, those 10 fragments will be received by the same specific receiver, which is very important if you want to recombine them. Let's kill this one. And give it one more try. Okay. That's the way with demos. The third one with the service bus. So you had the relay. That's the service exposition. You have the messaging, which is more of the queuing and the asynchronous processing. The third one is notification hubs. And notification hubs is actually built typically for mobile notifications. So you have your systems for Windows Phone, you have Windows 8, you have Android, and you have iOS support. And all of them have a different way of pushing notifications to their specific devices. With notification hubs, you shield that away. So as a publisher of notifications, I just publish with one line of code to the notification hubs. And the notification hubs take care of the distribution and handling messages maybe to millions of devices. If you get the luck of writing an application that, like a Windows Phone or Android application, that's listening or that's being used by millions of users, you can especially use this because you don't have to scale and deliver all these notifications yourself. That's a service that is doing that. So the demo that I have here, and again, I apologize for this side. This is the UI part. I'm not good at that. You might have seen things popping up every now and then on toasts. Actually, what are they? They are the things that I'm pulling on Stack Overflow. So I subscribe my application. I say, I'm interested to see all new posts, all new questions with these tags. So I say, if a question has a tag, and now it's HTML, Azure, and BizTalk. And obviously, Azure HTML is the most asked at this point in time. I want to have a notification. So what happens? I have a worker role in the cloud, just a service. It's pulling on Stack Overflow every now and then for questions that are with those tags. Whenever new questions are in the feed, the OData feed, because Stack Exchange has a very nice API. So whenever there's new messages available, it pushes them through the notification hub. A notification hub will send them to the applications. If I would be successful in this application, and I say, okay, maybe now I want to have a Windows Phone application, I could just write my new application and use the same code here. So I don't need to change anything there. The whole publishing site is totally final. The only thing I have to change is my applications. So I could now create my Apple and whatever applications that I want to write. Okay? So what I have there, some code obviously. So I have my, what's this? Is there something running there? So I have my worker role, and inside my worker role, I'm just getting the posts by my tags. At this point in time, they are just hard-coded. It's just a proof of concept. Of course, I would get them from my registrations. So I get the posts, and for every post, I do an announcement. And that's where the code is for the notification hubs. Maybe I should switch to the portal first. So in the portal, you have service bus. And on service bus, you can have your notification hubs. So if I click here, I have my stack toaster. And in the configuration, I need to specify these settings. And if you're a Windows 8 developer, you will recognize that. For me, that was new. But luckily, there's MSDN. So you have to register your application in the in the development center. And then you get like these IDs. I don't think you should keep track of that. I will change them anyway. So that's the settings for the notification hubs. I could do the same for my Windows Phone applications, for my Apple settings, and for the Google settings. Then I also have access shared access policies. So these are keys that you can use and that you have to use in your applications. And there's one that has the right to listen, and you use that for your clients. And there's one that has the right to publish, and that's for your backend, for my worker role. So what I did after that, in the announcement, the only thing I do, if I'm sending a template. So a template, I'm not sending and not defining on my backend how the toast should look like. I'm just sending a pair of name value items. So I say the message has this title, the ID is this ID, this is the URI, and that's the tag I want to post it on. Okay? So that's my server side. And then I have my application, my Windows 8 application, where I actually create a notification channel. And then I create a hub. And on the hub, I register for my template. So I say, if a notification comes in for that template, I will be, I'm interested in these notifications. So even if my my backend is publishing things maybe on XSLT, for example, I wouldn't get it here because I'm on the client just subscribing to notifications with that tag. So that's handy. I could have that one service publishing all the tags, and it would just get delivered to the right devices. Okay. Then the template thing, that's what happens here. So actually, you have a set of, it's like a template store or repository, and I'm getting one with an image and a text, and then I just say, and it looks like this, and there's a tag, by the way. Thank you for posting that question. I'm just changing the things with the attributes that were pushed from the cloud. So the message gets replaced on all of that, and that results in the template that I had in on top of that. So as a demo, what I can do, just sending my notification, and I will do it from my local system. So I send message how to set up Azure Connect with an ID, a question, and the tag Azure. So if I now send it here, I should be seeing this one. And then, of course, if I would be a good UI developer, you would see the question and all of that here. But that's something I'd like to give to someone else, okay? But that's the whole thing of setting up the notification hubs. So it's application connectivity, but to your mobile devices. So it's cross-platform, as I said. The templates are very useful because you just publish the data. You don't care about the UI. That's what you do locally. Forward to. Actually, it's not possible, so I had contact with them yesterday. What I wanted to have is the topics that I had in my previous demo. I wanted to have publishing to a topic. It gets handled by one of the things, and one subscription could have a forward to the notification hub so that it gets automatically pushed, that I don't need my backend. That's not possible, so I was hoping for that. The tags, very interesting, as I explained. That's the pub sub, so you register for one or more tags from the client, and you get the data in. Okay? Then we have this new beast, and who has used BizTalk before? I see some faces, but not too much. Oh, that's, I'm surprised, happily surprised. So BizTalk is there since 2000, and it hasn't changed too much since 2004-06. Let's say engine-wise, so the architecture is the same. There's things being added all over. what we see is that Microsoft is now having, of course, with everything going to the cloud, they are setting up bespoke services in Windows Azure. Actually, it's for 2 years almost that they are working on that. And it's still in a preview available. We might expect it to release later this year based on the roadmap they had. And it's used mostly in EDI, so in B2B connectivity. So B2B for those who don't have, let's say, the integration background. It's mostly connecting with your business partners and receiving, for example, invoices, sending orders, and all of that. That happens a lot of times with EDI. So EDI itself is a standard from, I think, in the 90s or the 80s even. That's very compressed, so it's like JSON, but old school. And it has all the data standard-wise. It says this is the invoice number and all of that. So that's supported. And you also have, and that's what I will be focusing on here, you have the concept of bridges. So what is a bridge? A bridge can have one or more sources, and then it has one or more pipelines. And in the pipeline, you can handle the message. So for example, I could be polling for a flat file on FTP, because that's what a lot of customers still use. Flat files, CSVs, all of those things. So you can poll for messages on the different sources. You can expose HTTP endpoints, and then you can handle them in a pipeline. So in the pipeline, I could have three sources, one flat file, one XML, and maybe one other type of XML. In the pipeline, I can have mapping. So I can say the flat file should become XML. I will translate that XML to a specific schema and all of that. So you have the mapper. You can do that in a pipeline. You can get data from inside the message, maybe the customer number, because that's what you will be routing on. Maybe you say customer number X should go there, customer number Y should go there. So all of these things are in the pipeline. And then they will be routed to the destination. Destinations are HTTP, blobs, service bus, so queues, topics that I just explained, FTP, and web services. And what you also have is connectivity to your local ERP database systems, so the LOB items. And you do that with the BizTalk adapter service. So if you have set up Windows Azure BizTalk services, you have the right to use a BizTalk service locally. And it exposes itself, and I will show that, to the cloud over a relay. So the thing that I showed in the beginning, exposing yourself over an endpoint to the service bus. So it exposes itself there. And whenever the endpoint gets called, of course, in a secure way from my bridge, it will route and contact the specific local system. So we have support for SAP, SQL Server, Oracle Applications and Oracle Database, and Siebel. So those are the five, let's say, line of business applications supported. And you can manage them through REST and PowerShell. So the demo I'll be giving is you have a customer or an application. They will be calling my bridge, and they have a region inside the message. So I want to get customers from region EMEA, so Europe, Middle East, Africa. So in that case, I will be getting the customers from SAP, because in the company, EMEA is still in SAP. We have a merger going on, but still, they are in SAP. The other ones for US, I will get them from SQL. Okay? I don't want to have my client application knowing or caring where the data comes from. I just want to expose my endpoint, my API, without having them to know that I'm actually routing to SAP or whatever. So that's the abstraction I want to make. And that's what I do with BizTalk services here. Let's close this one. So this is my BizTalk machine. Let's go to a nicer demo here. This is my bridge. So as you can see, let's zoom a little bit. I'm exposing a bridge to the outside, and the endpoint is by default. So every bridge you can see, and there's three here, they are exposed as an HTTPS endpoint. What I'm doing here, I have a schema, and this schema is just created as an XSD. So I say, if you want to get the customers, you have to give in a region, the name, and you can have a wildcard or the number. So I say, I receive this thing, and I will be sending back a customer list. And you see, it's a friendly thing. What I don't want to have is the format of SAP. And I don't know if there's people from Germany in the room. But if you look at the format of the API of SAP, it's all abbreviations in German. So you can't make a lot of things from that. So that's why I want to make a friendly API to the outside. Okay. I can have XML validation. I can have enrichment. So enrichment would be, in this case, for example, I'm having a SOAP header region. So if someone enters a SOAP header in the request, I will extract it and I will promote it to a property. The same thing for my customer name and the region in the message. And I use that with XPath. So I'm peeking in the message to a specific XML thing. And so on. So I'm just getting it here. And then I have the routing. So what you see here in the right corner, if the region is EMEA, I'm routing it to the EMEA bridge. If the region is US, I'm sending it to the US bridge. If you think back what I just showed like two demos ago with the messaging and the topics, what you could think and what you could do with service bus messaging, you could send something, like I said, country Belgium, and all the thing is true, and it would be delivered one too many. So you have two messages outgoing. This is totally different here. So you don't have this pattern. It's a first match routing. So the first route that matches the message will be used. So in this case, it's defined in the routing table. So here I just specify first EMEA. If that matches, send it there and just forget about all the rest of your routing table. So people who are familiar with BizTalk will agree that this is a total different way of working. You can maybe compare it more with the WCF routing service, where you have the same type of working. Why is it? Because all of these things, all of these lines, there's no persistence. So it's all in memory routing. It's not like you know with BizTalk that it's going through that message box, which is in a lot of situations good. Like here, I'm just doing a request reply. I don't want to have persistence in the middle. But you don't have persistence for example, asynchronous processing. In that case, you need to hop over service bus things like topics and queues. That would be good. The problem is that you cannot poll on queues or subscriptions. So they are looking into that, and then you can have the asynchronous pattern there. Let's now just take the EMEA bridge here, and you can see that I'm having a mapping. This is the mapper, and this is a very simple map. If you've done BizTalk before, you probably have seen more complex maps than that. But it's a new mapper, so it's not longer using XSLT behind the scenes, and that's what BizTalk was doing. So it's using a custom thing. You can, however, still include XSLT if you want, but it's all in memory. Why is that? Because they have the vision to have this mapper, for example, also applied on object mapping, or maybe JSON to object, or JSON to XML. So they want to have it in the future, of course, not only XML-based. And that way you could avoid the serialization cost in some cases. Now, let's create a new project, because I want to show you how I set up the local connectivity. Remember that I'm calling to SAP or to SQL. So what I have here, I have my adapter service, and I can manage that from the Server Explorer or PowerShell and REST. And what I can do, I can easily drop a destination there. How do I create that destination? It's just by specifying the settings here. So I have a wizard, for example, and actually I didn't show that, but I have an SAP running on this machine. It has 2 gigabytes of RAM, and it's running on Windows XP. So IT managers who always have to have the biggest SAP farm, I'm just running on a 2 gigabyte XP machine. What's that? It's mini SAP. So it's very handy to work and to develop it. It's not a full functional thing, but for integration purposes, it's very nice. And of course, for demos like this. So what we see here, I can do a query and the query itself. So this is an RFC and it's like an API thing. It's an RFC that you can expose from SAP. So I will call that with the adapter. So I see people going crazy, like, what's that? That's the SAP UI. Eh? I ended up here by not by going through navigation, but by doing things like this. So that's the way you navigate. Eh? So I think, yeah, we have far more better UIs than this. But anyway, what you can see, I have 4 customers that start with AB, because that was the request. Give me all customers starting with AB. I will do that from the cloud. So how did I do that? In my Visual Studio here, I just connect. Allez. To the system, I have to enter some SAP specific items and of course the password. And I hope I have the IP address right. Yeah. And then I can select BAPI IDOC. And if you're familiar with these things, you will know what they are. If you aren't, you're a lucky person. For example, here I do a GET for all the customers. So that's like the API I will be calling. So I'm adding that. I do a next. I say at runtime, if I will be get called from the cloud, how do you want to authenticate? And I'm using the same credentials here that I just entered. And then what I can do, I can select either an existing endpoint in my service, or I could create a new one. So if I have my service bus namespace, I could say, okay, let's just create and connect to my Cloudburst thing and enter all of my credentials. And that's the way where I define my URI. Of course, I will pick one that I just created, SAP, and I will say, okay, Cloudburst. So that's the sub part, create. So that's all I have to do. And at this point in time, a public endpoint on service bus with that URI is exposed and is exposing that specific internal RFC from SAP. To continue, what I can do, I can say, okay, add the schemas to BizTalk service. And you will see here in my project that I created, there's a new thing, the schemas here. And I can see the layout of my SAP structure. And these are the nice abbreviations I talked about. So I know that this is the customer number. This is the name, of course. This is the, I think, the place, the city, and so on. So I have to give in a request, and this is a request, and I will get back a list of customers, okay? So if I now switch to my test application, this is my UI. So I think it's still better than Scott's. Eh? Yeah, and it's better than Scott's two of yesterday. It doesn't call form one, right? What I will be doing, I can send different messages. So I can, for example, call all the EMEA messages, all EMEA customers. So that's the friendly XML contract that I created. And you can see I will be sending it to this endpoint. Okay, behind the scenes, I'm using my service bus credentials, of course, to authenticate and to get authorized. So if I now submit, and this is US, so US should be going from SQL. So I have a SQL database, and actually I just used the exact same thing. So let's create a new one, ABFast, for example, with some settings. If I now do the call, so I reached out to the cloud. The cloud was coming back to my local system using the adapter service and the service bus relay. And these should be the results. So AB Fast, for example, was there, okay? If I now do the same thing with a request to EMEA, which is in fact SAP, I'm doing the call, I get back the SAP message. You can see I have the four customers that I just showed in SAP. For my client, he doesn't know. So if the merger continues and if we consolidate on SAP or on SQL, I mean, things don't change to the outside in the API. Okay? So that was the demo around Pistock services. So you have EDI X12. It's hybrid connectivity all the way. The scenario is that it's ready now, because if you know Bistalk, it's totally not comparable at this point in time with what Bistalk has, let's say, feature parity. So you don't have workflows. You don't have the real durability, the management thing. So there's a lot of work to do. Eh? But if you want to use it today, I would say it's perfect for B2B scenarios. So we have customers looking into it to have their B2B received in the cloud, so their EDI, and to route it to their internal ESB systems. Eh? And that's what I said. They combine it with Bistalk. So you can have your public endpoints there and combine them to a local Bistalk server. Okay. Data integration, I will go fast here. But what you can do, you have SQL Azure Data Sync. So Data Sync allows you to synchronize databases from on-prem to the cloud and to on-prem again. Eh? And what you can do, you can easily set that up in the cloud here. So you have sync groups and agents. So for example, I have the Kiwi agent, and Kiwi appears to be the name of my machine. And this is the machine. So I can, this is an agent running on my machine, and I can add one or more databases to that, local databases. They don't have to be on the same server, but this server has to be able to reach them. That gets synchronized, for example, in a group. So I'm synchronizing it in this case with a cloud database that is running on my server in SQL Azure. Eh? So if I create a new record locally, let's call it, what I also had, I've created a new website. I really went totally the UI side this time. So I have an ASP website, no MVC and all. You can see that there's customers, and the AB Fast, the customer that I created just now locally, is not here. So they are coming from my cloud database. So if I now just would do the synchronization, sync, it takes some time, and the customer should be appearing there. So what happens behind the scenes? They create a lot of new records and artifacts in your SQL database, both locally and in the cloud. So they create 11 stored procedures. They create a new table. There's triggers on your table, and there's new types. So it's important to understand that, for example, triggers have, in a lot of cases, a potential effect on your queries and all of that. So it's important to understand that there's impact on your database schemas. You also had the ability to do row filtering. So you could say, I only want to have the records synchronized that, for example, are e-commerce enabled. It's not configurable in a new portal. So if I think Martin, you were, Mike was saying, who is happy that the portal disappeared, the Silverlight portal? I agreed with everyone except for this one. So row filtering doesn't appear to be there. And it's running in preview, so that's also something you should be careful about for production reasons, because, it's not clear what will happen with it. So synchronization was successful, and if I do a refresh, I hope to see AB Fast, I think, on the third row. Yep, and there we have it. So I had my local data synchronized to my cloud database. What I didn't talk about is the lock resolution. So you can say you have synchronization in both ways. I could say if I create something new in the cloud, it will automatically be pushed also to my local database. So you have bidirectional synchronization. You can say I want to only have client to hub and all of that. And in case of locks, so where you have concurrency issues, you can specify who wins, the cloud wins or my client wins. So that's important to understand. Active Directory, so I talked about application integration, I talked about data integration. There's also identity integration, and we've seen a good set of things yesterday already with ACS at MyGet, for example. What you also can have is Active Directory sync. So you can have your local Active Directory synchronized with your cloud-based Windows Azure Active Directory, so users can be synchronized, okay? And you do that with the directory sync tool. You also have single sign-on. If I go to the portal here, where is it? Let's dismiss these. If I go to the portal, so this is my Active Directory, I can register applications. You have for I did it for Salesforce, for Yammer. So if a user gets created in my Active Directory, it would automatically get access whenever I enable it. For example, in Salesforce, I can say these users have access to the Salesforce, and they can just log on with their Active Directory credentials. So for example, Geronimo, he has access to Salesforce. Eh? So that's very nice that you don't have to keep different identities. You can link things with each other. Okay? So access control service, we talked about that. So claim transformations, and you can use ADFS as an identity provider. So for the cloud portal that I showed, we have customers logging on from with their AD credentials, because they want to use that. They don't want to have the username password we have. And also more recently, you have multi-factor authentication where you can have, like, you get verification through a phone that it's really you who wants to log on. So if you want to have things more secure, that's the way you can do it. The next thing, so application data identity. The next and the last thing is the IT Pro thing, network integration. So I have two demos, and actually you have two ways of setting virtual networks up. So you create a VPN actually, and the first one is point to site. So what it is, you have, like on my laptop, I can connect to a virtual network. So I created a virtual network in the cloud, and my network gets registered. Actually, I'm linking to the virtual network of Coldit Integration Cloud, so the platform that we have. And from there, I will be polling on my laptop on a file share. And whenever I drop a file there, and in this case it will be a PDF, it gets picked up and it will be delivered to SharePoint Online. And I will sign it in the cloud. So I will sign the PDF there. It's like for e-invoicing, for legal e-invoicing purposes. So what I have there, I have a virtual network here. Actually, I have another one, but it's filtered. It's in my production subscriptions. And there I configured that I could have point-to-site connectivity. So you have point-to-site like there, and I could say, okay, I will allow users to have point-to-site connectivity. Once you have that, you can download an easy tool. I think it's an MSI, and you can run that. And whenever you have run it, you can see there's a new connection there. So VPN shared test, that's the virtual network that I had. And I can say, okay, connect. And this is the pop-up you get. It's like the VPN client for Windows Azure Virtual Network. And I'm connecting here. And if I do an IP config, you should see that I have an IP address. So in this adapter, or in this network, I have an IP address of 010 at the end. Eh? So going back to this portal, I should be able to see the virtual networking demo. I might be signed out by now. So this is, by the way, the share. So I'll be pulling on that share with the user from the cloud over virtual networking. And I just need to enter my credentials. And I haven't configured the DNS. That's something you obviously would do. So I say, every 20 seconds, poll on this location for PDF files with this user. Okay? Whenever you receive a file, you transmit it to this endpoint, and you can see this is Office 365, so I'll be delivering it on my SharePoint Online library. So let's go to the monitoring because the endpoint should be started. So this is the management phase here. So I will start the endpoint, and let's first put a file there. So this is my drop here. I will drop my invoice, and now start the endpoint. So I hope that from the cloud, I'm now able to connect over the virtual network point-to-site to my local system. It gets picked up. If I go to the tracking, and I see the virtual networking here, demo, it gets delivered to the other system, and that was SharePoint Online. Let's see if I still have that open. So this is my SharePoint Online, a library, and I should have a new file delivered there. So the file that I dropped in locally was this one, and if you look, there's no signature. Eh? Come on. Yeah. There's a new, about a minute ago, file delivered to the cloud, and you can see that the file has been signed with this image, and it has some things like it's Cloudburst, and I think I have a reason for beer smuggling. Something personal. So that's the point-to-site connectivity we have. If I now just disconnect this one again, then I will switch to my last demo, and that's one for... it's one of the new things I wanted to set up for home. I wanted to create a restful house. So I have a house for since 3 years that we renovated, and one of the things we had was home automation, so domotics. And of course, I can play with things, and I had a Windows 8 application where I could open curtains, switch off lights, and all of that. What I said, okay, let's try to use this site-to-site network. So let's connect my local network that I have here. Let's connect it with the cloud. I have a virtual network in the cloud, and I set up site-to-site. So what I had to do, I bought this ASA Cisco device because my vision is I want to have a device-only house. I don't want to have servers or even lightweight computers. It should be all mobile things. No hardware except for devices. And my logic should be in the cloud. That's what I want to aim for. So what I do, I have an IPsec tunnel. So I had to configure this, and I can tell you, if you're a dev, this is hard. But I managed Monday morning to do that. So I have an IPsec tunnel with my virtual network in the cloud. Then I have a web role, and it exposes an API. So now I have an API in the cloud that exposes my house, and if you call that, it will route an IP, because this is the home automation system, and it exposes itself over IP. So it's a TCP call that gets routed, but it gets routed from the cloud. Okay. So how will we set that up? First of all, what I also did was buying an IP camera. So this is, and I hope my wife doesn't suddenly pass by, but this is my house at home. And you see the curtain is closed. I also have... exactly. Repeating the question, go geek, he said. So I'm now pinging. So this is my... If you look in on the top, we have cloudapp.net. So this is my cloud web role. And he's doing a ping. The domotics system from the cloud. So what I will do now, and please don't store my API key. I'll take down the role and I add some extra authentication to that. So if I do a put on curtain one, a put is doing it down. So I will delete it to take it up again. So let's see what happens. I get back at 200, so that looks okay. And there it goes. So that's the, okay, blame it on the IP camera here. It should be all the way up. And I can, yeah, like that. Maybe my neighbor will be walking by, but they didn't know about that. So that's the nice demo I wanted to do. On site to site, I think Patrick has a nice session and more explanation on how to set it up after this. So what I did, I created a secure network tunnel, like an IPsec thing, and that's handy, but you have to understand that it's only a secure network. At least we believe that there's no eavesdropping possible. But like for devices, that's not the way you want to work. Like mobile devices, you don't want to have your private network out in the open. So like a car and all of that, the Internet of Things, that's not the VPN. That's not perfect for that. You also have the way to configure. So Patrick will show that. You have configuration scripts for Cisco and Juniper, but also Sandrino has a nice post on that. You have the Windows 2012 routing and access service something. So you can set it up instead of buying a device like a Cisco router. You can have a 2012 virtual machine or physical machine if you want. There's also the gateway configuration. So I created a gateway in the cloud, and I didn't show that. So if I switch back here. You can create and delete your gateway. So this is the IP address and all of that, so it's connected. If I would want to change things here through the portal, I have to delete my gateway. And if I want to recreate it, this IP address would change. So that means at home I would have to do the configuration all over again. With PowerShell, and that's the session that we will have, you don't have to do that. So I would say PowerShell is the way to configure these items. And you have static and dynamic routing, with dynamic being in preview and not supported by my device. And that was my session on connectivity. So I hope you liked it. There's a lot of other things you can do with connectivity and integration. And I believe it will be more and more important because hybrid is really the way forward, in my opinion. Thank you.